Hello and welcome to the Institute for Science and Policy's Virtual Bookshelf, a monthly segment where we talk about something we're reading, watching, or listening at the intersection of science, policy, and decision making. I'm Nicole Delaney, the business support for the Institute for Science and Policy, here talking to George Sparks, president and CEO of the Denver Museum of Nature and Science and the founder of the Institute. Thank you for spending some time chatting with me today.
Hi, it's George. Welcome. Glad to have you doing this, Nicole.
The Institute has recently teamed up with the DU Corbell School of International Studies and the CSU New Spur Campus to host a series of events that are exploring the current and future challenges of our food systems as we experience climate change. So today, I want to talk about Kiss the Ground, which is a documentary that we had screened as part of this event series. Kiss the Ground is directed by Josh Tickell and Rebecca Harrell Tickell, and it uses leading scientists, ecologists, farmers, and others to propose what is referred to as a relatively simple solution to humanity's greatest challenge. So, George, you joined us for the documentary, and I want to know your opinion. In what ways does the theme of interconnectedness show up in the film?
So the film was much more emotional for me than I thought it would be. I thought, you know, a film about agriculture, how much can that really inspire me or move me? But it really was. It really had an impact upon me. And I think the interconnectedness that I saw, each of us thinks about the world being interconnected, but it's more in an intellectual way or a school learning kind of way. Here's how all the systems work together. And clearly farmers see this a lot differently than we do. They see it in a visceral day-to-day, how everything fits together. And we tend to think about water problems or climate problems or agricultural problems or forest problems. And in fact, they're all one problem. They're all one giant ecosystem. And this film, as well as any I've ever seen, really demonstrates that.
Thank you. In discussing his approach on teaching regenerative agriculture to other farmers, farmer Gabe Brown had said, "I don't want to be on welfare anymore." And he was referring to government subsidies in crop decisions. And so what do you think are the roles of the government and policymakers in supporting farmers and facilitating this transition to more sustainable agricultural practices?
Well, clearly, with all the human beings around, we all have to eat. And agriculture is a fundamental part of any society. In fact, societies in the past have collapsed because our agricultural system collapsed. So I can see definitely the government, local or federal, having a role in agriculture. I think Gabe's point was if we could learn how to farm and make it profitable, then he wouldn't have to be on welfare anymore, and they would be an industry that's not subsidized as much as it is today. And regenerative agriculture does hold out some hope for farmers being able to produce more crops and do it more profitably.
In the documentary, they also talk about Native Americans, the original caretakers of where we're currently residing, and how they were driven away for settlers to farm row crops. And we also know that regenerative agriculture is not new. A quote that they had in the film was that we're farming the way nature does. So as a leader of a nature and science museum, what do you see as your role in integrating more full, robust historical perspectives on the exhibits and programs that we have?
Historically, museums have looked back on native populations and their practices and their civilizations with the eye of the dominant culture of today. And as we move forward, I think we're understanding that we don't probably have the correct perspective on what happened back then. So as we evolve our exhibits and our programs, we're getting much closer to the native communities and trying to learn from their perspective, how did they do things and how we might present that to modern audiences.
As a food eater, what do you think of as your role in the regenerative agriculture movement?
So this is a really personal question because I became a vegetarian a few months ago And it's fascinating to think about how what I eat affects the world. I'm not opposed to meat. I'm just doing it for health reasons. But I do believe that a plant-based diet is probably better for the planet, and I'm doing a small incremental part of that. I also believe we should get our food from local producers wherever possible. I've become addicted to the farmers market on South Colorado Boulevard every Saturday morning, and it's become a ritual to go there and buy food, and it directly supports local farmers.
Excellent. Do you believe that regenerative agriculture is a simple solution to climate change? Why or why not?
Well, I don't believe there are any simple solutions to climate change. I think it's such a multidimensional problem. I think regenerative agriculture, where it could be practiced, is an appropriate tool. If the data is correct, about a third of the greenhouse gases produced come from agriculture, probably a lot of that from cows, actually, but also from tilling the soil and the carbon cycle being disrupted by farmers. So I think where it's possible, we should use it. Eastern Colorado may be a tough place to do it. There's not much moisture out there, so it's a little different way of thinking about it. But like most things that are wicked problems, it takes a lot of work on many different areas to make progress.
Great. Is there anything else you want to share, your thoughts about the film or closing things that you want people to know?
You know, this idea of the small cycle, small water cycle, I thought that was interesting, and it caused me to think back. A long time ago, I was a sailplane pilot. We'd fly sailplanes, and they'd haul us up in an airplane on the end of a rope and cut us loose. And I can remember looking across eastern Colorado and seeing the cumulus clouds out across the eastern plains. And it turned out that those cumulus clouds, as often as not, were above plowed fields, because the plowed fields were darker than the surrounding soil, and they would get warmer only by a few degrees maybe, and then the moisture would evaporate out of those plowed fields, and the result would be, as the moisture rose, it would, at a certain altitude, it would condense and form a cloud. And so you could just look across the plains and see these series of clouds like steps out across the eastern plains. And if you were a good sailplane pilot, you could get into one of these thermals and you could ride it up, if you will, to the base of the cloud. Then you would glide to the next plowed field, lose a little altitude, and then spiral in that and go up to the base of the cloud. And you could go literally hundreds of miles by just following these thermals that in many cases were above plowed fields. So that was the small water cycle in real life.
You were riding them.
They were just like a little fountains of air that you'd fly into them, and you would go into a real tight circle, and it would just carry you up to the base of the cloud, and then you'd fly out of it and start to glide down to the next one, and you might lose 1,000 feet of altitude. But then you'd hit the next cloud and next thermal and just ride it up, gain another 1,000 feet, and just continue across the plains.
That's amazing. Thank you.
It was pretty cool. No, I thought the film was entertaining. I'm not sure it was completely accurate scientifically. And we got a lot of different perspectives from the panel that talked with us. But it was, I think it's a really good film. I think it provoked, at least in me, a lot of thinking. And that's probably as good as we can do these days.
Well, thank you, George, and thank you to our listeners. You can find out more about the documentary by going to kisstheground.com, or you can watch the full-length version of it on Netflix. Be sure to tune back in to our book review next month and find out what we're talking about here at the Institute for Science and Policy.